It's cool story, cool story. The Wheel of Time, the ultimate fantasy. It's cool story, cool story.
Huzzah.
Huzzah.
Did you ever welcome back.
Did you ever play Cave Story?
Cave Story, C-A-V, like Victor?
Yes.
No, what is that?
Oh my god. Okay, I think it was just for the PC. I don't know if it was an online game or what, but by the time I got to it, it was an online game. It's really fun.
Interesting.
But huzzah is said in it by this one character a lot.
Gotcha. Okay, so just yesterday, I sent you the link to the music from a specific video game.
Oh, yes. Yes.
And it's called Evo, The Search for Eden. It was on the SNES, and you said you'd never played that game?
I don't think so. It doesn't look familiar to me.
If you can find a way to play it, and it might be on like the Switch Virtual Console or something, I would recommend playing it because it's one of the most unique game. Like, it's kind of, if I recall correctly on like Wikipedia or something, they talk about it being like a really unique style of gameplay where it's literally a game about evolution. And so you start off as this like stupid little fish. And as you kind of like beat up other fish and like collect little gems and things like that, you get evolution points and you can be like, oh, I want to grow a longer tail, or I want to grow teeth, or I want to get a fin up here. And then you like become amphibian, and then you become dinosaurs, and then you become mammal. And so it kind of like actually lets you evolve your creature through.
Oh,
it's a fun game. I recommend you play it if you've never played it and check it out. But listen, so there's music from that one of the stages on that game, and I sent you the link to it. And for anybody out there, we can like post it on social media, or maybe Matt, you can put it in like the link or something when you post about the show episode coming out.
Mm-hmm.
That song.
It's very pretty, by the way. I love it. I love music from SNES games.
I do too. I love like 8-bit music.
My brother was really good at just listening to the song from the video game, regardless of like what console, like how detailed the music was, and being able to like learn it on piano. Like, it's so talented.
That's impressive.
Yeah, he dedicated time to it, but he always got it.
Okay, so listen to that little soundtrack from the stage of Evo, and then go listen to Fiona Apple's Get Him Back from her Extraordinary Machine album and tell me it's not the same music.
Oh, I can't wait because I know that song by heart.
So anyway, I don't know why I brought that up other than I think I sent you the link to it the other day and I was reminded of it.
I'm into it.
Well, another random thing is Matt and I, it'll be like a week and a half ago at this point by the time this episode comes out, but we just finished recording a live video, basically speed dating of all the Wheel of Time podcasts with the Dusty Wheel.
So fun.
It was fun. I don't know. I was really nervous and I don't know why.
I mean, I get it. I was a little nervous. I wasn't nervous until I got in the room with everybody.
Yeah.
In the Zoom room. And I was like, oh no, they all kind of know each other and I don't know anybody. I've heard their podcasts. I've heard all of their podcasts.
I think it's one of those things, like, I wasn't nervous about like being live and all of that kind of stuff. It was just, I didn't know necessarily what to expect. And so like maybe something technology will go wrong or I'll be like, oh, I didn't prepare enough, or, you know, that was what I was anxious about.
Yeah. But it was great.
It was fun. Super fun.
Everyone was really cool. Everyone was very like, I don't know, just easy to be around.
You hear that? Wheel of Time content creators, Matt just called you all easy.
You're welcome.
Also, I feel like an episode or two ago, I brought up yet again Karen Kilgariff's album.
Oh, yeah, I did. I was going to listen to it yesterday, but I didn't.
All right, well, you're fired.
Okay, well, I have been listening. I have been watching the Trixie Mattel makeup videos, especially the ones with Britney, since you've recommended them.
Are they not the fucking funniest?
Oh, 10 out of 10. It just reminds me of the heyday when was like still kind of new.
Yeah. Do you watch still?
I used to watch it. I watched it all the way until they had their own show, like the Trixie Katja show.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
And I think I've seen one episode of that. And then I think they like switched back, but I haven't picked back up.
Okay. Yeah. I haven't. I never watched it like sequentially. Maybe I should. I don't know.
Oh, they're so funny. I would recommend it.
Okay, I'll go check them out again. Maybe that'll be my new thing to fall asleep to at night.
I did it on an airplane once. I was like, oh, I'll just watch all this.
Oh my god, what a fun idea for an airplane thing. Yeah,
if you're able to get the Wi-Fi, I just watched through a bunch of them. It was really fun.
Oh, I've never once successfully gotten Wi-Fi on an airplane. I don't believe it's real. I don't believe it's real. I think they just ask you to pay like $25 a minute, and then all it links you to is like the airline's homepage.
Ooh, I have had that happen once, and I was really mad.
Furious.
What do I have? I don't have anything other than another movie we watched. So the last episode I told you we watched Trapped at Gorgeous.
Yes.
So we picked From the Jar again, and it happened to be another throwback week again. We watched, what was it? Oh my gosh. Oh, Romy and Michelle's High School Reunion.
Oh, the best.
Oh my gosh. Love that movie.
I love that movie. I've probably seen that like 10 times.
You know who I forgot cracks me up so much in that movie?
Janine Garofalo.
Oh, her, yes, for sure. But I didn't forget about her.
Candace.
You got it. You're close.
Cameron Manheim.
Yes.
Oh, God, that was going to kill me if you ruined it for me.
Oh, my gosh. She cracks me up in that movie.
She's so good. She is like the, you know, the meme of the guy that's like, well, guess I'll go fuck off then. Like, that's basically her whole character is like being told to fuck off the whole time.
The best. The best.
So good.
Highly love recommend that movie. And that's all I got.
Great. Well, we left on quite the cliffhanger last time.
We did.
And so I think we should just get into it.
Agreed. And I think it was serendipitous the way you ended that chapter, because I started my chapter with a very similar thing. With the, okay. Like the quote that you use at the end of your chapter. It's yes. Kind of repeat to the beginning of mine.
Oh,
and that's
fun.
Where I started. All right. So chapter 23, the name of the chapter is Sealed, and the icon is the little wheel of time, which indicates laziness on the behalf of whoever chose it. I don't care. They have so wow. many beautiful icons. They couldn't have just thrown... Unless the wheel of time specifically meant, like, timeline or, like, Taverin only.
Well, I mean, maybe we'll learn more about what happens in the archways in future chapters that will make you eat your words, Matthew.
We'll see about that. We'll see about that. For now, I think when the Wheel of Time pops up, if it's not the first chapter or last, I'm like, lazy.
Great. Okay, speaking of which, Trixie Mattel. Back to Trixie Mattel. Oh. She has videos where she cooks with Easy Bake ovens and like toys from like the 50s and 60s and things like that.
Oh.
Which... It's so funny. It's weird how when you start developing an interest in something, you're like, you know, it's like, oh, only these things. Like at first I was like, I will only watch Trixie put on makeup. And then I was like, well, I've watched all of her makeup videos like 25 times. I was like, okay, I'll try one where she's like cooking with an Easy Bake Oven. And then of course I was like, oh, I like these. I'm going to watch all of these now. And you just kind of like start branching out further and further from the first obsession that you had with something.
It's like playing Tetris. You're just clearing off the lines.
100%. I was watching one the other night, and it's okay. So on a lot of them, she'll like hold up the box from like the 50s or 60s with like the children playing with the Easy Bake Oven or whatever. And her running joke is like, and as always, these children are all dead. She's dead. This one, totally dead.
Oh my God.
I don't know why that reminded me of what you were just saying.
You remember the toy Light Bright?
I never had one, but yes.
Okay. The commercials for Light Bright, I remember the theme song, like, so I have a weird memory for things like that, as we've heard me sing Nick at Night jingles.
I could do the Light Bright jingle.
Oh, okay.
I'm not going to.
Okay. Well, you know, you get it. It's very cute, but I remember one time I was at work with my friend Ryan, and back in the day, and we were talking about old jingles for some reason, and Light Bright came up, and he was like, oh my God, I remember the voices from that commercial were so, and he did an impression of it that literally was like, Light Bright, this demonic voice. And I was dying, and I was like, I don't think that's the way it was. And we like searched it on the internet and listened to it. And of course it's like, Light Bright.
Yes. Yes. Very operatic, not demonic.
Oh my gosh. The memories, the way we remember things.
Oh, that's why it all came. Here we are. You were just like saying lazy.
Yes.
Wheel of Time chapter, lazy. So I was thinking of dead. That's where we got to Trixie Mattel.
Wow, that's a jump. Lazy
it was
to
your,
dead.
It was your intonation.
Okay, so the chapter starts out with this line. Light pulled her apart fiber by fiber, sliced the fibers to hairs that drifted apart, burning. Drifting and burning forever. Forever. I started with this because if that is not a script to a 90s perfume ad, I don't know what it is.
Britney Spears.
I just picture like cascading fabric and stone pillars and just like emaciated people lying around depressed with that like light pulled her apart fiber by fiber. Justice. You know what I mean? Like, and then
Essence by Britney Spears.
Right? You know what would be a really good setting for a 90s perfume ad from The Wheel of Time?
No.
The Ways.
Explain.
I picture The Ways as like expansive darkness with just random stairs upwards, surreal sort of looking.
Like an M.C. Escher drawing.
Yes, yes. And then there's like the pocked floor and like all these random pillars that are like broken. Just put in like 5 Calvin Klein models from the 90s and name the perfume Black Wind and you're
Decay.
Decay, exactly.
Black Wind would be a really good perfume name.
Right?
That's pretty good. Saying.
Enough about the perfume. We're not even in the chapter yet. So as it says, Egwene steps out of the third arch. She's traumatized, as we know what she just went through from the last chapter. And she wonders now if her destiny is really just to continuously abandon and disappoint Rand. But it's immediately clear to her that something is wrong in the actual world that she's in. So she has to, like, put all of those feelings aside for a moment.
Let's bottle those feelings right up.
Bottle them up. I mean, I have a lot of experience with that, Egwene.
Did I ever tell you that one of my high school teachers, like, in a lecture to the class, was talking, he was telling the advice, or to the advice to the class, like, you know, if you've got a lot of like feelings like hurt and anger and whatever, like you put those inside and you close the door and you lock that door and you just leave them in there. And I was like, is he literally telling us all to like bottle up our feelings and basically like die from the inside?
It's like, wait, are you still talking to us? This sounds oddly specific to you.
You know, I look back on some of the teaching choices that teachers made from, like, high school for me, and I'm like, wow.
Oh, my gosh.
Education sometimes is interesting.
Yeah, the way you're supposed to just trust your teacher because it's your teacher, and then you get older and you realize that they're kind of just like me figuring it out on the fly.
Oh, 100%, yes.
So, yeah, she realizes something is amiss in the room, and she looks around, and the Aes Sedai all look wiped out, and a few of them are surprised to find that she's unharmed. And the Tarangriel that she just stepped out of is vibrating to a stillness. It feels very... it just feels off. And then quickly the Amyrlin washes her clean. You know, she's sealed to the White Tower as accepted now. And she walks off vowing, and the Amyrlin then walks off vowing to discover what went wrong. After calling Egwene daughter, it's a very like beautiful part of the ceremony where Egwene, even though she's like so like triggered, for lack of a better word, she's like, oh, she's calling me daughter now instead of child, you know?
Yeah.
And Sheriam says she's worried about you, and Egwene asks if she has any reason to be, and Sheriam's like, let's get you dressed.
How about this weather we've been having?
Ooh, chilly. You must be... let's just get you dressed. And Egwene is like, okay, great. So she gets dressed. She has her accepted dress on now, and she has a serpent ring given to her.
Is that kind of like Beyonce's Freakum dress?
It's exactly like the Freakum dress. So she gets all of her things now. Elida brings them over, of all people. And she's, you know, very paranoid because she's like, oh, have these papers been touched? She kind of feels around and notices, okay, everything's still here. But she's like, okay, who could have looked at them? They could have put it back. I'll never know. In any event, Elida is like, I'm Jasmine Masters and I have something to say. And she just goes in on Egwene. She's basically like, I don't like you. I never liked you. I don't want to see you. I don't. She basically says to her, I don't agree with this choice to raise you to accepted. I don't care what anybody says. I don't even care about anything about what you did. It's basically just because of who you are as a person. You suck.
Elida is basically like, you're ugly, you're stupid, I'm going to kill you, give me $200.
What is that from?
Dr. Phil. It's a guy who's like, so you told your mom you're ugly, you're stupid, I'm gonna kill you, give me $200.
There are so many good sound bites of Dr. Phil on the internet.
Apparently people on TikTok have been calling him daddy. And so he did a TikTok where he was like, a lot of you been calling me daddy.
Oh god. Hard pass. Elijah says, you know, you're a Wilder, you'll always be a Wilder, you'll never be glam. Go back to Party City where you belong.
Never be glamour.
And she storms off.
Can we pause?
Mm-hmm.
We didn't discuss in my chapter of last week's episode where Egwene was the Amyrlin and Elida betrayed her, and we find out that Elida is Black Aja. Do you think that is accurate or not?
Oh.
Because you said you felt like it takes their worst fears and like turns it into kind of like a world, or puts them in the world of their worst fears. So I'm just curious what your thoughts are on like how accurate some of the things are.
I think that the things that happen in each world are all different because of the it's like butterfly effect. They're all different because of circumstances that happened previously. So I really don't think Elida's Black Aja in the actual like canon storyline or whatever.
Okay.
I really for some reason think we could trust her more than I thought. More than they're leading her, like making her out to be.
Okay.
It just feels like
you think he's misdirecting us.
I do. I think they're giving her the Leandrin treatment on purpose to mislead us.
Okay.
You know, I feel like she's Red Aja, right?
Yes.
See, like, that is the only thing about it, because every Red Aja person I think that we've met in any sort of significant way has been bad. So, I don't know. That's the only thing. So, on the fence. But she has, I mean, I don't know what her hard-on is for Egwene. I really don't know what it is. I wonder if it's because she's guiding Elaine so vehemently on this, like, path towards being the first, you know, Andorian queen that's Aes Sedai. I wonder if she feels like she's guiding her to do something with Rand, and Egwene is in the way. I wonder if that's what it is.
Yeah.
So we'll see, I guess.
We'll see what emerges.
Yeah. After she walks away, after telling her off, basically, Egwene is like, okay, Sherry, like, you could have helped me back there. And she's like, you're a novice now. You can take care of yourself. And she's like, okay, well, in that case, I have some questions to ask. You know, I want to know what happened, and don't put me off. And Sherry's like, okay. Know your place.
I'm going to need you to dial it back.
Yeah. You're not an Aes Sedai yet. But there's this cute moment where she kind of smirks, like she kind of liked it. Like, yeah. She liked the tenacity, you know?
Yeah.
Soon, Alana joins them and interrupts them and tells them her take on what happened. And we don't really, at least I don't remember us knowing a lot about her yet. What I know of her, she's of the Green Aja. She was part of the ceremony, and she's the one who said that she felt a reverberation at the very beginning. So she feels a little bit too responsible, if you ask me, for what happened in there. I know she was the one who called it out at the beginning, but she's like, she's really upset. She's like lambasting herself. And she insists that she's going to ask the Amyrlin to punish her in the same way Egwene's been punished. She's going to do her chores. She's going to take a beating. She's going to have these meetings with Sherriam. And Sherriam's like, whatever you say, weirdo. Like, calm down. I don't know what your problem is. But she then mentions that the only other time a Tarangriel has reacted that same way was when two Tarangriel were in the same room that were related to each other. And so one being activated caused the other one to react in a negative way. And then I think they both melted or something. So
two Tarangriel walk into a bar.
So this obviously has something to do with that ring that Egwene has, because she reaches for it and is like, whoop. And she just changes the subject. And she's like, you know, Alana, I actually want to ask you something. What does it mean to be Green Aja? And I was actually glad she asked this, because I was wondering a little bit more about the differences between the Ajas.
Yes.
So I'm just going to quote the sort of two parts of her response. To be Green Aja, first you must love men. I don't mean be in love with them, but love them. Not like a blue who merely likes men so long as they share her causes and do not get in her way, and certainly not like a red who despises them as if every one of them were responsible for the breaking. Alviarin, the white sister who had come with the Amyrlin, gave them a cool look and moved on. She goes on, and not like a white, Alana said with a laugh, who has no room in her life for any passions at all. And Egwene is like, okay, but what does it really, what does it mean?
Right.
She's like, okay, I know what you mean. She says, Browns seek knowledge, blues meddle in causes, and whites consider the questions of truth with implacable knowledge. Implacable, implacable, implacable.
Implacable.
Indubitably.
That's the past tense. It is implacable.
Implacable?
That's what, yeah.
Okay.
It says implacable when I press the play button on Google.
All right.
But he also sounds a little British. I don't know.
Oh, well. Well, listeners, how do you say that word?
Implacable, implacable, or implacable?
Irreplaceable. Let me start over.
Are you going to title this one like when we said, is it mustache or mustache?
Maybe. She says, Browns seek knowledge, blues meddle in causes, and whites consider the questions of truth with implacable logic. We all do some of it all, of course, but to be a Green means to stand ready. A note of pride entered Alana's voice. In the Trolloc Wars, we were often called the Battle Aja. All Aes Sedai helped where and when they could, but the Green Aja alone was always with the armies in almost every battle. We were the counter to the Dreadlords, the Battle Aja, and now we stand ready for the Trollocs to come south again for Tarmon Gaidon, the last battle. We will be there. That is what it means to be a Green. And I love that, because I really didn't know what the Green Aja was all about. I still don't know what the Gray Aja are. That's a thing, right?
Well, guess what, Mimi? Now you do. Yeah, we still haven't really learned what the Gray Aja is, but I don't think it'll spoil anything if I tell you that they're basically like diplomator. Wow, that was supposed to be diplomat and like negotiators. Diplomator. Oh.
Okay, I guess I kind of don't understand what a blue Aja is then. Meddling causes.
I think where a gray would be like, let's negotiate treaties and how understand and interpret the law and all that kind of stuff. Like a blue would be more somebody who's invested in causes and like justice and things like that.
Okay. Okay, so the Amyrlin then joins them, and Alana makes her plea that she said she would to be punished, and Swan says, don't be ridiculous. And she then tells her that if she wants to be punished so badly, she can speak to Sharium. She will not be doing dishes with Egwene. And Egwene is becoming increasingly paranoid about who could be Black Aja. She's like, why would she want to be with me? Is Sharium Black Aja? Does she know? She's very, very paranoid, and I think it's for good reason. And the Amyrlin then leaves them, and Sharium dismisses Egwene, tells her, go back to your room, and, you know, you've had a long night. But before she's gone, she hears Sharium yelling at Alana, calling her a fool and saying she's not going to go easy on her. And there's, like, this moment where Sharium realizes that Egwene's still there, and she's like, get the hell out of here. Keep your mouth shut.
Egwene's there with, like, a bag of popcorn, just, like, slowly eating one kernel, watching the gossip unfold.
Like that Cardi B meme?
Yes.
She's watching Fergie?
Yes.
So she, you know, scurries up to her quarters, and she goes to Nynaeve's room, and she goes in, and it's this really cute scene, sad but cute scene, where she opens the door, and Nynaeve is sitting on, like, her bed, and Elaine is laying on her lap, and she's consoling her. She's in the accepted garb as well. She's got the serpent ring, so we can, you know, deduce that she successfully went through the Tarangriel, but had a bad experience, as they all do. I wonder, do we ever get a perspective chapter or hear what Elaine went through in there?
I don't think we ever do get that. There might be moments where she kind of reflects on it a little bit, but okay. I don't think we certainly don't get a chapter about it.
Yeah, I guess the only implication we have is that she says something like, I couldn't possibly be that awful, could I? Or something
that. Yeah.
I wonder what she had to see herself having to do, you know? But all it took was this utterance, and Egwene had put everything aside because, you know, as soon as she got out of the Tarangriel, the whole room was, like, vibrating, and it was chaos. So just this mention from Elaine kind of brings everything back, and it's all coming back to her now, Celine Dion moment. And she breaks down too, and Nynaeve comforts them both, saying it eases little by little with time, and she swears that they'll have their revenge one day. And that is the end of my chapter.
Yay!
Yay.
Great job.
Thank you.
Well, chapter 24 is called Scouting and Discoveries. And it's a Matt chapter because we get the little sigil of dice.
Yay.
Yay. So he's waking up in the same chamber that we last saw him in, where he was kind of like laying there trying to figure out how to get out of Tarvalon. And he is still not sure how he's going to get out of there, but he's not giving up.
It's like escape from Witch Mountain.
Or escape from Alcatraz.
Or Broke but Down escape, Palace.
I guess escape from Witch Mountain is probably the most accurate.
Oh, true, true.
Although that was escape to Witch Mountain.
Was it?
I think it was, because I think every time I saw it, I was like, that's the stupidest fucking title.
Kyle Richards would not like it if you said that.
Fuck Kyle Richards.
Ooh, by the way, it's coming out so soon, I can't wait.
Beverly Hills?
Yes.
When?
Oh, the trailer, I think, drops today or tomorrow.
Oh my god, I'm so excited.
And you're right, it is Escape to Witch Mountain. Well, I guess that makes sense. That's where they're going.
But why would you...
Escape from.
It should be Escape from Witch Mountain.
Is this what happened in the writer's room? I wonder. This argument?
Clearly not, because they did it wrong. Well. Two serving women come in, and they give him...
a number six spicy chicken sandwich combo.
Basically. They give him a tray of food and some hot water for washing up, and he hops out of bed and he stuffs a slice of ham in his mouth and pours some water to wash and shave.
Attaboy.
You know, our boy Matt, he is already looking better. He sees himself in the mirror and he's like, hey, I look a little like somebody who's been ill for a little while, but there's a little more color in my cheeks and they're not quite as hollow as they were yesterday.
Must be nice.
To be healthy?
Yeah. I cannot relate as I'm looking at my foot in an air cast.
If only there were an Aes Sedai around to heal you.
Tell me about it.
He sits down and... RJ writes that he eats every scrap of ham, turnip, and pear, which is such an interesting combo. Well, ham and turnip, I can see that. And pear is kind of like a dessert, maybe?
I could see ham and pear. I don't know if I could see turnip and pear, but I guess, you know.
Turnips are kind of like on the sweet side of a savory vegetable thing.
Yeah. And, you know, you generally can have a sweet thing with ham, like cranberry sauce or,
that's
you know?
True. I guess pineapple. I just hate ham, so.
Oh, I love ham. Sorry, I just turned into a monster. Did I just turn into a Trolloc? I love ham.
You were so passionate about that. He heads out of his room. He grabs his dice cups and he starts to kind of like wander around the tower grounds. And nobody's really noticing him because he's just wearing kind of like country clothes, and there's enough random men wandering around in kind of like country clothes and workers and things like that nobody's paying him much attention. And he thinks that it would be nice to run into Egwene or Nynaeve, or even Elaine, who he describes as a pretty one, even if she does have her nose in the air half the time.
I was like, cute.
Matt is kind of a fuckboy.
He is. I didn't know he had these. I didn't even know him and Elaine have really interacted, hardly at all. It's
yeah.
kind of interesting to see there, like, how he
views her. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
He finds a little group of guardsmen and he goes over to kind of ask them some questions like what the weather's like on either side of the island and, you know, what's going on off the island. And the guard is like, well, you know, whatever, whatever. But it doesn't really matter because you're Matt Cowton and you're not going anywhere. And he says, last night a sister, herself in person, did come to the bridge where I did stand guard. She did drill your features at us till each could speak them back to her. A guest, she did say, and no to be harmed, but no to be allowed out of the city either, if you must be tied hand and foot to keep you from it. Mm. So Matt is like, okay, well, I mean, I'm just out for a little walk, nothing to see here, so guess I'll just head off. And he basically then kind of like, in my mind, walks away muttering like Yosemite Sam. It's Yosemite Sam, right? Or no, maybe that's yeah. Elmer's Fudd, the like, Razzer-frazzer.
It's either.
Okay.
It's Montana Max.
Somebody tell us if it's Elmer Fudd or Yosemite Sam. As he's walking away, he notices a novice walking toward him. And even though his memories are kind of Swiss cheesy, he's like, oh, I know her. And guess who it is?
Dun, 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 dun.
It's our BFF and cultural icon, Horny Elsie Grinwell. And he's like, oh, hey, like, you remember me. And she's like, what are you doing? What are you doing up and out? And he's like, hey, we met on your farm. And he kind of like walks toward her and she backs away and he's like, what's the matter? You look like you don't know me. And she is very cold and is like, I have work to do. Let me by. And kind of like moves around him and goes past him. And Matt's like, okay, whatever. I was just trying to be polite.
Nasty.
Bookmark that moment.
Oh, I already have an idea in my mind.
Did you read the next chapter already?
No.
Okay. All right. So he keeps walking around the tower grounds and he comes upon a practice yard where there's a bunch of men being trained to be warders or soldiers, at least. And he sits down to watch them practice and realizes that there's also a ton of women staring at one specific pair. And it's because one of them is a tall, lithe man who moved like a cat, almost as pretty as a girl. So it's our little Galad. Who last time you mentioned Milo Ventimiglia?
Yeah, however you say it. Milo Ventimiglia, however you say that, yes.
Great.
What a man.
What a man, what a mighty fan. So Matt gets a look at the guy's sparring partner, and he's like, that must be Gawain, because he recognizes, like, Elaine's red gold hair. And they make their way over after practice is kind of, like, paused for a moment. And they're like, hey, you must be Matt. He says that he would recognize him from Egwene and Elaine's description, which I feel like, how would you know what a person looked like based solely on how somebody described them, unless it was like really drilled into you?
Well, listen, we're getting a lot of very vivid descriptions from Robert Jordan. So maybe the kids have the same sort of
artful
gift of gab.
Yeah. Okay.
And I bet when you're not a kind of person who's surrounded by TV and music, you're just a lot more eloquent.
And I guess also, you know, if there wasn't a lot of things like TV to distract you, you know, what's going on in the real world might be kind of fun and gossipy, so.
And they probably know every other, like, male.
Oh, I guess that could also be true.
Location.
Yeah. Okay.
Who is a male besides a warder or Matt?
Probably, like, servants. Some servants.
Oh, true.
So they have a little back and forth where Matt is basically like, you know, swords aren't the only weapon. I bet I could take you both on with a quarterstaff. And they kind of get their egos bruised a little bit and are kind of like, sure, buddy. Yeah, I'm totally sure that that's going to happen. It's not like we've been here for a year sword training. And also we're like trained in the sword at the palace, but sure.
And you're also like emaciated.
Right. And like are just like a farm boy. So they very reluctantly take the wager after Matt and Hamar, who is the warder who's overseeing the training, kind of like badger them into it. And Matt says to himself, time to toss the dice. And Hamar looks over at him and is like, you speak the old tongue? And Matt's like, look over there, and walks away. And he heads out to spar with Gawain and Galad, and RJ writes, as Galad rushed at him, he slid his hands along the quarterstaff and pivoted. The end of the staff thudded into the tall man's ribs, bringing a grunt and a stumble. Matt let the staff bounce off Galad and spun, carrying it on around just as Gawain came within range. The staff dipped, darted under Gawain's practice sword, and clipped his ankle out from under him. And then as Gawain fell, Matt completed the spin in time to catch Galad across his upraised wrist, sending his practice sword flying. So far, Matt is off to a good start.
Yeah.
Who knew? I guess he did okay in the first book against some Trollocs and stuff when they had to, like, charge into battle for a minute.
I don't know. I felt like that the moment was so charged that just something came over him.
Yes.
And this just feels like more, like, way more seamless. You know what I mean? It's not as serious of a situation, and yet he's able to just, like, slip into this, like, ultimate fighter.
Yeah. I'm gonna be so curious to see if they do things like in the TV show, like, will the fight scenes feel kind of more like big cinematic fight scenes, in the sense of, like, I don't, like, will there be any of those sort of like Matrix-y moments where, like, they swing the axe and the camera like slows down as they bend below it and things like that? Like, how are they gonna do those moments? I'm very curious.
Yeah, me too.
I kind of hope it's not Matrix-y. I feel like that could be really cheesy.
I feel like a few moments you could do like close-up-y type stuff, but
there's,
I don't know,
either a movie or a TV show about like gladiators. It could be 300. It could be that Rome mm-hmm. TV show. But there's like a fight scene that's pretty early on, and it has those moments where it's like slash with the axe, and then they do all this like weird gratuitous CGI blood. It's really strange. If anybody can help me remember what that's from, it's unlike anything I've ever seen. So Matt's doing okay. He kind of leaves Gowan where he is on the ground for the moment, and as he's like starting to rise up, he just whacks him across the head and takes him out. Matt's like, oh, hope he's okay, and starts to feel pretty weak and hungry and kind of overwhelmed by, you know, recovering from a near-death possession, and is like, I gotta end this quick. So he starts to kind of like press at Galad, and RJ writes that his quarterstaff flicked past Galad's sword and in quick succession struck knee, wrist, and ribs, and finally thrust into Galad's stomach like a spear. And then Galad kind of falls over, and Matt has to stop himself from almost like crushing his throat with the quarterstaff. And he's kind of like horrified that his instincts were heading in that direction, that kind of level of violence.
Yeah.
And it's only then that he realizes that the entire practice yard is kind of like frozen and looking at them, and all the Aes Sedai are kind of staring at him, and Hamar shouts out a question and asks everyone, who is the greatest bladesmaster of all time? And all of his students shout back, Jerome. That's how I'm going to say it. And Hamar says, what?
Go ahead. Have you ever watched The Last Dragon? Like the old karate movie or kung fu movie or whatever?
No, I don't think so.
Oh my God. It's a classic movie. It's like very 80s. There's...
Is it like a Karate Kid knockoff?
No, it's like... It's a really iconic movie. You should look it up. You've definitely seen it referenced on things. But there's the bad guy's name is Shonuf.
Oh.
And at one part, he's like, who's the most powerful man in the world? And everyone in the place is like, Shonuf. That's what that reminds me of.
Got it. Hamar says, yes, that's correct. During his lifetime, Jerome fought over 10,000 times in battle and single combat. And he was defeated once by a farmer with a quarterstaff. Remember that and remember what you just saw. And Hamar hands Matt the silver marks that Galad and Gowan owe him, and Matt sees a crowd of women around Galad, and Gowan kind of makes a joke about how Galad will be lucky if he doesn't end up bonded as a warder by the time he gains consciousness, because several of the women around him are green Aja. And Matt is kind of like, I don't really get that joke, but okay. And Hamar asks Matt where he's from, and Matt says, Manatharin. I mean, the two rivers. And
Matt, get it together.
Honestly, not very good at subterfuge. And he says he's heard too many old stories and walks away. And RJ writes, he thought that if he parted his coat, he would see a hole where his stomach should have been, a hole growing larger as he pulled the rest of him in. But he hardly thought of hunger. He kept hearing voices in his head. You speak the old tongue? Manatharin. It made him shiver. Light, help me. I keep digging myself deeper. I have to get out of here. But how? How indeed.
Mm.
And that's it.
And that's it. Wow. That is pretty intense. That was an intense chapter.
What did you think? Are you enjoying the Matt chapters?
I am. I like his inner dialogue. I like the way he looks at things. I like the little, like, even that little moment with Elaine. Like, just him talking about how he looks at her. I really like the Matt chapters.
He's a very, very unique point of view character.
Mm-hmm.
He has a lot of, like... He's kind of a funny contradiction because he has both a lot of self-awareness and like zero self-awareness at the same time.
He feels very impulsive to me.
Yes, I would say that's accurate. What was your favorite part of these two chapters?
I guess I liked the encounter with Matt and Elsie in the yard. Because it was so... Number one, I liked the way Matt was talking about it when he saw her. Like, he was kind of excited. Oh, someone I know, and I'm going to go talk to her. And he had this, like, silly thing, like, I remember she was really, like, boy crazy, so she'll definitely talk to me no matter what.
Exactly.
And he's kind of disappointed afterwards, like, oh, wow, he likes all boys except for me.
Yeah.
So I liked it because it just shows more of his personality.
Yeah.
But I also liked it because I think it's going to come into play later on. And I guess you saying, like, TB determined... I'm correct. So what about you?
I'm also going to say, even though I would typically say like an Egwene chapter would almost always win out on a Matt chapter for me, I'm going to say I really liked the fight scene between Gowan and Galad and Matt because I just feel like our poor boy Matt has basically, like, just been falling downhill since the first book. And so it was just nice for him to have a little bit of a win, you know?
Totally. And I love that.
Agreed. It was a lot of fun. And it was just also, I liked that it was a really detailed fight scene, but it was also like so concise. Like it happened, the speed with which it happened was really kind of captured in the storytelling, despite 100%. Being so detailed.
Yeah, totally.
Well, yay.
The one thing this chapter brought up for me that I hadn't considered was when we're talking about the three boys that are Taverin, but looking at Rand as like, you know, this sort of reincarnation of LTT, right?
Yeah.
In my mind. And then I've been looking at Perrin as just Perrin with like this wolf thing going on.
Yeah.
And now with this situation with Matt, it's starting to become clear to me that he is probably some sort of reincarnation of someone else from Manatherin and with the old tongue, who was the one person who was able to, you know, fell warders with a quarterstaff. So now I'm like, okay, Perrin, maybe you are also a reincarnation, or whatever this book is going to call it, of someone else that had happened to have that wolf quality. Mm. And maybe that is why the Aes Sedai are afraid of you, because maybe that person, what did that person do?
Can we make merch that says that wolf quality?
That wolf quality. I like that. That wolf quality.
Yeah. So, yeah. Matt is, I think in this chapter we're seeing, I think there's something there that wasn't there before. Kind of, you know, there's more to the picture.
Totally. Yeah. Looking forward to finding out what that is.
Yes. Well, if you would like to help us grow, the best thing you can do is to rate and review our podcast wherever you listen to our episodes.
Yes, and the best way for other people to find our podcast is through word of mouth. So tell a friend, post on Reddit, you know, get us out there. Find other ways to spread the word about us.
We also love connecting with all of you who listen, so feel free to send us an email at coolstorypod@gmail.com. Find us on Instagram at coolstorypod and Twitter at coolstorypod1.
Yes, thank you so much for listening to Cool Story.
See you next week.
Bye.